Music is central to our well-being. If you're listening here, chances are you feel the same. The Classical Post podcast uncovers the creativity that exists behind great music. We believe music is interconnected with other art forms and life experiences. It doesn't exist in a vacuum, but is often influenced by other sources. No matter who you are, cultivating your creativity is fundamental to being better in business and living a more holistic life. Discover more on this podcast. I'm your host, Jonathan Eifert. Thanks for joining me today, and I hope you find something valuable in this episode. Pianist Jolf Wagner had a light bulb moment while building his first artist website in 2012. What if, instead of short clips of his performances, something every pianist publishes on their website, he interviewed his musician friends about their craft and careers? Inspired by Bognar's love for Bravo's Inside the Actor Studio, the first iteration of the web series that would become Living the Classical Life was born. And more than a decade later, it has grown into an incredibly popular award-winning show that's featured the best of the best in the classical music world. With more than 3 million views on YouTube alone, Bognar's in-depth conversations with the likes of Daniel Trifonov, Yuji Wang, Joyce DiDonato, and Susan Malky illuminate the inner world of classical musicians, revealing the passions, fears, and rewards that fuel their lives in music. In this episode, Bognar and I talk more about the early days of living the classical life, as well as the mix of hard work, luck, and opportunity that helped the show take off, and the importance of introductions, no matter your industry. Full disclosure, I have a very close relationship with Living the Classical Life. I'm a member of the board of directors and have regularly advised Bognar on the show's branding, outreach, and marketing over the past 10 years. It's been my absolute pleasure to see how Living the Classical Life has grown over the past decade, and I hope this deep dive into the show's evolution inspires you in your own creative journeys. So why don't you just dive into where we first met? I mean, I believe it was Bob Durso had a concert at the Ethical Society in Philadelphia, correct?
That's right. And we did some chamber music. I did some solo playing, and you were promoting that event, and that's how I got to know you.
Exactly.
So the concert happened, and it was quickly clear that you had a lot of ideas about the music world and how to reach a lot of people. And so I was trying to get various projects of my own going, and that included promoting my then first recording. And then there was some idea of putting together a website and also just getting word out about me as a pianist. But the next step was me getting together the website. And so I think probably 12 years ago, that was maybe a time when it was a little bit more important to have a website. As a classical music performer, I mean, now we've seen the expansion of different corners of social media like Instagram and Facebook and professional Facebook pages. But at that time, really, everyone had to have a website if they wanted to be followable. So I was putting together a website and then I needed some content for it. And in trying to put that together, whether it be a 3 to 5 minute video of me introducing myself and playing, the first filming sessions ended up being really awkward and it didn't really work out that way. So in the absence of knowing what to portray about myself, I was speaking to people on camera and I was asking questions. I have this natural curiosity about people and their life stories and how they follow their passions, how they overcome adversity. So it started to look more like the interview shows that I was obsessed with. And yet, as I got older, I started to resist even the word interview because it just sounded so one-sided. I really do try to put myself inside of these conversations. Anyway, the show took shape as such, and we just threw it together and called it Jolf Wagner and Friends, which I never liked because it was centered around my name and I didn't want the project to revolve around me. So then you came into the picture, we floated some ideas and you wanted to do a complete rebrand. And one of the suggestions was Living the Classical Life and we went with that. And then you came up with really a coherent vision that I was happy to follow. And it went from there. So then you coordinated social media, the web presence. And I think this is really the point of one of the great aspects of our collaboration is that you had a vision as to how to drive all of this forward. That's the origin of living a classical life.
I love that we can talk about this, because now that I am thinking about this in greater detail, I think it was 10 years ago. It was 2013 when we first met, and now we're speaking in 2023. So we're talking about a decade, and I should have thought about this earlier. So we're talking about a decade.
It was much longer ago.
I know. But when you think about a decade and everything that has occurred, particularly with living the classical life since that origin story, it's really incredible. And I do remember you coming and saying, look, we have this show, quote unquote, Jolt Bagnar and Friends, but we need more views. We need more, people interested in this. You know, how are we going to do this? And you're right. I remember thinking, well, we need a new name. We need a different kind of strategy. It can't just be your friends, quote unquote, anymore. It needs to really dive into people who are celebrities in the industry. I remember specifically thinking, you know, everyone you had on the show was interesting, fine. You know, you had intriguing content, but what was going to capture the attention of the world of classical music, globally speaking? And I remember specifically thinking, well, we need Joshua Bell, or we need a Yuja Wong, or we need a Daniel Trifonov, et cetera, to really come in, talk with you, filmed, et cetera. And then I think people would find that interesting on more of a global scale, and then things could take off. And kind of easily enough, you had the connections at the time, it seemed, to reach out and then make a lot of that happen.
That's absolutely right. I had the advantage of one of these starting points that you mentioned, as Daniel Trifonov was my upstairs neighbor at the time. So I asked him if he would join the project, which, I mean, in those days, I really didn't have much to show for it, but I did have an idea, and he was trusting me as a friend. So we had our episode, which was, a long time ago now. That was really one of the early works, and you can actually still see that on YouTube.
It was definitely a breakout moment, I know, because that was a phenomenal episode, the way he was describing phrasing, if I recall, and just how he is approaching, you know, kind of physiologically the keyboard. It was just an amazing episode. And you're right, it was one of the early ones, but we were definitely lucky in that, you know, you were already friends with him and he was your neighbor. So that, I mean, talk about serendipity.
Absolutely. And he was also portraying a touch of method acting, because he was trying to show how using the same phrase, he could play it in different ways, portraying a different type of vision or emotion. And so we really got kind of, one of the shows that I really loved while I was growing up was called Inside the Actor's Studio. They would talk about their craft as well as their life story. And so in this episode, I started to explore what that would look like on my show, having a bit of both. After that was finished, Yuja Wang had actually seen the episode, and she did want to participate in this. And that was shortly after that episode. So these all started to quickly come together. One thing accelerated the next.
And I remember, as a side note, after the Yuja episode was filmed, she didn't want to release it or something.
That's right. We have actually run into this with, not specifically with just her. A lot of artists will have a conversation with me. I tend to draw out very personal things, and not gratuitously, I hope, but just to give a sense of what it really is like for them to be them, and what is their inner world. I think that is fascinating from the standpoint that most of us can connect with pursuing a passion and a craft. So they'll see the result, and then they'll say, oh my goodness, I said all of that. Then they'll get a little bit nervous, but then we try to assure them that this is for a purpose, which is to help others.
And I remember specifically after Yuja didn't want to release it, you wrote or called to me or something and said, can you talk to her? And I remember writing her also myself, just saying, look, we have this great footage, please. Like, can you just, and so sure enough, you know, however it worked in the end, the episode did air. It was a fabulous episode. And I believe that was filmed in the old Steinway Hall, if I'm not mistaken?
The old Steinway Hall, which was an amazing place. Yeah, we filmed her there, and it remains our most viewed episode to date.
You know, the other thing I remember, especially early on, when we talk about some of these episodes, I remember part of the, after we got the strategy in place and the rebrand of the name and got these celebrities, I remember one of the tasks I did in probably 2014 was starting to write to the media, write to music journalists specifically and pitch them saying, look, this is this new show. This is the vision. These are some of the new episodes that we released. Let's, you know, can you cover it? And I remember there was a lot of resistance and people, you know, who now would not think twice, you know, they would be like, oh my God, this is, you know, amazing. It was a hard sell at the time. And it's kind of ironic because where we are right now in digital media, where we are at in classical music and social media, we're just in a whole different era right now. So any kind of thoughts on that?
Well, it takes someone with courage to try to push these ideas forward. And it takes connections and it has some ideas as to how to connect to the web. And we didn't really know how to do that. Yes, we had some connections, but in presenting a vision, it really takes a third party to do it. And the same goes in the world of connecting an artist to a concert presenter. It takes usually a third person to establish a certain amount of trust and present a few talking points and explain that this is what it's about. This is, you know, roughly an interview show, and yet it goes beyond that. It's musician to musician conversations, and here are some examples. If I had tried to do that alone, it would have been lost in a sea of wonderful voices who are trying to present their own projects. I think that's really the point that I would make there. It really takes an independent person to do that.
Well, I know I was thrilled to be a part of that in a small way. I know a few years after this kind of, when we got started, I think it was 2015 or so, or 2016 even, Deborah Voigt was on the show, and I was kind of behind that, pushing it. And I remember she, I believe, was the first kind of major opera star to be on the show. Obviously, there have been many since, but in terms of the first, she was kind of the first big one. And I remember us, I think, having a martini in Cleveland yes. at the Cleveland competition and, you know, kind of saying, well, if this could work, you know, if we could tap into you know, her audience, this would be really great for living the classical life. And we could, you know, have better inroads with the opera industry. And sure enough, it worked out. And I remember we filmed in New York and it was a great episode.
That was an extraordinary moment for us to have that windfall. Debbie Voigt, I had seen her on camera. I had heard her recordings. I had seen her host the Met live broadcast and thought that she would be a perfect spokesperson for the world of classical music, but also for her own incredibly inspiring and hopeful personal human interest message, which was her coming to terms with her personal challenges, whether it be addictions, struggles with weight and image, just finding herself. And she was so incredibly honest and forthcoming and self-aware. We get letters every single day from people who say, thank you for portraying this. It gives us some insight into whatever challenges we might have to start asking some questions, because she is so honest. And look, there she is on camera looking more or less well. So it was at that point, yes, the show started getting busy. It started taking a lot of time away from what I really thought I was focusing on, which was piano performance. But I also started to realize we had a mission in helping people.
Let's take a quick break. Did you know Classical Post is a brand built for your pleasure by Gold Sound Media, a New York creative studio developing content for music lovers around the United States? We're always looking for new opportunities to partner with music presenters, artists, and record labels. If you're interested in content to build your community, please get in touch. Head to goldsoundmedia.com. Now, back to the show. Let's talk about the moment when the show really
took off in terms of the millions of views that it has today. Because obviously we can talk about the crescendo over time and how it gained legitimacy in the music industry and, from the artists to managers to the public. But there was a tipping point, I believe, where it kind of all coalesced and it was like, wow, this is living the classical life with millions of views. Do you want to talk about that for a bit?
One of the moments that really helped the show was getting some credibility with the press. It was right around the time that you described that we were connected via you to Rheingold Publications in London. And that put us on some of the issues of International Piano Magazine. So we were getting some mentions, we were getting quotes. These are things that are taken seriously by other corners of the music world. So it was part of the momentum we were building. We were building more guests that were an offshoot of that. But we were also switching over to YouTube as our platform. We had started off on Vimeo. YouTube has the advantage of having algorithmic boosts. Our guests like Yujo Wang and Daniel Trifonov were certainly driving the interest and the numbers with their names. But you were also showing us how to connect that with social media and having everything cross-referenced. That's stuff I would have never known about.
I'm glad you brought up the Rheingold connection, which now today in 2023, they have since been bought out by Mark Allen Group, I believe, who owns Gramophone, but now they also run International Piano. And you're right. I remember flying to London and I was working with various other clients at the time, including Living the Classical Life. And I remember meeting with various people over there and we were discussing the show and what could be done. And you're right. There were various kind of hooks, if you will, or coverage or mentions, et cetera, that got it to take off from that perspective, from a kind of a music, a global music press, if you will. And you know, that was also early on after, you're right, we had some of the initial episodes with the celebrities, and we also had that view count to prove there was traction. And then you're right, there was that press component then that had hit to kind of really take it off even further.
Well, just to zoom out and show our viewers here that this might also apply to their projects, especially if they're not going to be starting a podcast or whatever their project might happen to be. I had some advice given to me early on by the conductor, Ben Zander, whose TED talk about classical music has to date been seen about 23 million times in two different locations. So his early advice to me when I was his student in Boston was, if you're up to important things, you can't do it alone. And if you want to negotiate those important things, you have to do it in person. So in that case, you flew to London, you helped negotiate this when it needed to be closed. I flew to London and closed that further. And that has been a lesson to me. So if people are viewing this and there are some projects, be prepared to go on moment's notice, jump on a plane and meet with those people who have the opportunity for you. It makes all the difference. It can make the difference between yes and no.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. There is something I just saw on TikTok the other day. Nikki Haskell, the socialite and ex-stockbroker, et cetera. She said, luck meets opportunity. And of course, I'm sure plenty of other people have said the same thing, but I just remember her saying it recently. And it's so true. You know, you have to have that opportunity. You have to be prepared, but then you get a little luck in there and all of a sudden, boom, you know, you get something great.
Well, yes, because the other side of that is what you mentioned, luck meets opportunity. The opportunity comes from people who have their radars on, the feelers out. You happen to have in your awareness, the industry contacts. I can't possibly keep track of all of that if I'm also, in my case, a pianist, and I'm just trying to keep down the basics of running and producing a show. It really takes a team. And that has been in every aspect of my musical life. It takes a team.
I'm so glad you said that. Teamwork, especially in the music business, in any business, but because we're in the music business, it is so critical. And I know, and you know many as well, that they can't always have that team. You know, it takes a bit of time until you can kind of work up to that level where you're building that team who really have that expertise behind you to push your talent forward, to make the connections, make the brand, if you will, grow, whether it's a personal brand or some sort of business brand. But you saw that and valued it early on. And even though that, you know, what we did over the years changed and evolved, that nucleus of that idea of having a team and having experts around you, I think bode well for you in the end.
Well, look, because Jonathan, when I first met you, we were, I don't want to say that you were starting out with your projects, but you certainly weren't where you are today. And I was truly getting started. So we presented our own dreams, and we were also young enough in the whole process that we became good friends. And so we were enjoying living life as well. We would explore different parts of Soho and, you know, check out a bar and talk about our ideas. I think what I would also underline about a team is that those people can help you get through periods that might be more discouraging. So there were a lot of setbacks and bumps along the way from my project, Living a Classical Life. There were so many things that stood in our way, from the mundane to internal problems to just keeping with it in terms of the energy. And there were so many points at which you as a team member were just offering support and saying, look, this isn't the end of anything. Here's what you can consider. That is really part of what we do in the music world as well. We assemble that team. If you're an opera singer, you need a vocal coach. And if you've had a worse night on stage, you'll have that vocal coach backstage, and they'll say, look, this is how it was, and here's how you're preparing for your next concert. So I think, and to continue with that, speaking of, you know, bars in Soho, you had invited me to events that were in the fashion industry because you had connections there. And it was through there that I met Marlon Corvera at that time, Jeffrey Rodas, and then he's since gone on to Armani. And these formed the important basis of a lot of other opportunities that I've had since then, including being dressed by Armani for all of my filming shoots. So that's both amazing and fun.
It's incredible. And I don't know if people, especially any artist that would be listening to this episode of the podcast right now, really think to themselves about strategic introductions. I think it's very common in when you talk about publicity, everyone's mind always goes to press. They always think, oh, I need some article published, or I need, you know, an interview, that type of thing. But, you know, equally powerful, I believe, are strategic introductions. And you really just proved that point. Can you talk specifically about that?
Well, yes, because these strategic meetings, that for me, with my personality, I always just like to do my thing. I don't really like to push myself in any kind of formal way. The people you meet along the way might really like not just you, but they might really believe in your passion for what it is you do. So my ability to connect with people and draw out a story. Let's use very specifically Marlon, for example. He has arranged for me to play concerts. You know, coming up later this spring, I'll have a charity fundraiser event where I'll be collaborating with some famous opera singers. So it's just astonishing that someone who is in the fashion world can also connect me into the music world, and you, someone in the music world, can connect me with the fashion world. So it really starts to become a web, and each day it surprises me.
And that's so important for people to realize, yes, that, you know, those kinds of opportunities, like a fashion partnership where you're dressed for shows and concerts, et cetera, in Armani, really stemmed from a strategic introduction. And then now later on, it enables you to have some concerts because of that introduction as well. And I think that's extrapolated in so many areas of PR, quote unquote, if you will. And that it's far sweeping, you know, beyond the actual articles of press, traditionally speaking. And I'm glad you see the value in that, because I think that's a secret sauce that not everyone really talks about.
It is. And again, I can't do that alone. I find it exhausting. And so if there's someone else who understands where I'm coming from and what might be helpful for me building my project, then that's really where 1 + 1 = 3 It's I'm within my own world, and you bring your world to me.
Going back just a little bit, I was starting out for the most part. I mean, I was 25 years old. I think that's what other people don't understand. I'm 35 now. So 10 years ago, I was 25. And that's when you, as Jolt, Bognar and Friends, the show, came to me at 25 years old. I mean, I think that's one thing that is, you know, I look back on even and think, oh my God, that was crazy, because it truly was one of the big breakout moments for me. And that now a decade later has spawned so many projects throughout the classical music industry, and has helped me build the company that I have today called Gold Sound Media.
And you know me, Jonathan, I can't possibly let this conversation go without me asking at least a little bit about your perspective, because you mentioned you were 25. How would someone like me identify that there would be someone like you in your position? Were you always, as you were at that age, full of a vision and able to connect with people in an articulate way? Was that always just who you were?
A very interesting question. I suppose, yes. That is who I was and had been at that point when we had connected. But there is this misconception, I think, about age in general, and especially with classical music. I mean, I think it's interesting in the pop world or rock or whatever, you have also 20-something artist managers who are managing major pop stars. And yet in classical, if you're 25, they're like, oh, you're way too young. You just need to be like filing, you know, papers or something, you know, or getting coffee. You can't be doing anything major, which is so weird. And it's one of those things that has always frustrated me about the classical music world. Just because you might be in your 20s doesn't mean you can't do big things, because people in their 20s are doing massive things in other music worlds, in other music genres, just not classical, surprisingly. But I think, yes, if you have the wherewithal, if you have, like you identified with what I had, yeah, go for it. You know, propose, you know, so artists, you know, who might be listening to this right now and they're looking for a team to build a team. You might have people in your network that you can say, you know what, this person has the smarts, or they have some sort of like secret sauce that I could see them doing X, Y, Z, and then, you know, pitch them, see if they want to work with you to achieve your dream.
Absolutely.
That's what
Absolutely.
You did, right? I mean, that you were kind of, you know, like, because I think the other part of the story that maybe people don't know is I had been in London going to grad school. So I had been working in the music industry. I had various work that I was doing over there in with internships, et cetera. So it wasn't like I was not in it, and I was trained as a pianist in undergrad. So it wasn't like I was not part of this world, but in terms of like after school, you know, after grad school, you know, doing this professionally, that's where I was really starting out. And I, at the time, wasn't even sure if I was going to start a company. I think that's the other thing that was kind of this question mark. I mean, now I can look back and say, yes, that was the origin of Gold Sound Media. I started the PR company and that's that. But at the time, I wasn't sure. And it was people like you and the projects like you brought to me and others where I realized, wait a minute, I can harness my past training as a pianist and my business expertise that I learned through grad school and experience like living the classical life and roll that into what now is Gold Sound Media.
Well, and then there's another further aspect of this that I would add, which is that the momentum that you built with living the classical life and its visibility ended up helping you as well. Because that extended to working with some really wonderful clients like what is now Piano Cleveland, which includes the Cleveland International Piano Competition with Portland Piano. Really, it just extended on. And then there was a moment which I think was just a stroke of genius. You said that I needed to have good photos taken of me as portraits, again, for the website, you know, before tying it back to the need for the website, you sent me a list of photographers, and of those, there was one, Kalpo Kigas, whose work I found to be luminous. I really resonated with his vision And that started out a ever since longtime collaboration with him. I was his first American commission, and now I've traveled all around the world with him doing all sorts of projects, not just photography. But as a result of your connecting me with him, I've also now gained a lifelong friend who truly inspires me.
Another strategic introduction, right?
There you go. Yeah, I don't think we planned it that way, but these three things can't happen unless they have a starting point.
It's so, I'm glad you brought that up as well. And it really is that. And I wasn't using, I use the term now, I mean, people can call it whatever they want, but I use the term now in terms of a service now at Goldstein Media called strategic introductions, because I realized people like yourself have benefited so much from that pairing, if you will, of locating someone, of saying, yeah, they would be a really good match. There could be a really good synergy. And that kind of matchmaking, if you will, later on, I actually do now use that as a service for clients. And other people have said, yeah, this is really something that not everyone does, but it really is valuable to them.
Yeah, that's absolutely brilliant. And for example, last summer of 2022, Capo invited Living the Classical Life to be on site for the Pärnu Music Festival. And we ended up filming three of the ERV conductor dynasty. Actually, they weren't just conductors, the family musicians, but we were able to film Naimi Järvi, Paavo Järvi, and Kristjan Järvi right on location in this beautiful place in Estonia. So this has continued a ripple effect from what, you know, we trace it back, what you started.
In terms of building an artist team with concert booking, management, PR, all of those kind of aspects that are needed in an artist's career in one shape or another, do you have any thoughts on that, especially now that you've gleaned all of this wealth of experience talking to all of these celebrities now over the past decade? Any thoughts on that?
I definitely would say that for a client and, you know, with working with you and for me as a client, I know that I can only work with the people who could also hypothetically be my friends. That's not always going to be in a professional relationship. However, I've noticed, and we've had a conversation about this, the PR agents and the managers tend to be pretty evenly matched in terms of who they represent. So if there's a very friendly, open performer, they tend to have a pretty open and friendly manager, or at least there is some degree of connectivity. So that would be my advice to people, is seek out people who you are really on the same wavelength. Otherwise, you might not see eye to eye, or you might not have the same values that will connect you to those further people with whom you'll resonate. It's after all, it is operating as a business. This is a world of business. As much as we don't like to think on those terms, we have to navigate in a way that works for everyone. So identify the people whose qualities you trust.
And what do you say to people who speak specifically about PR and say the two comments typically are it's too expensive and it doesn't work? Now, of course, not everyone says that. Obviously, that's the big caveat. But there's quite a contingency of people that say that, including the traditional artist managers. I've heard many comments over the years, and it's, you know, obviously me working in classical music PR, it's rather hurtful when I hear that. But I'm curious to hear your thoughts on that.
Yes, There definitely is a little bit of there is a cost. There's an investment element to this. If we put it in the framework of how much it cost us to go to music education, conservatory, purchasing an instrument, paying for lessons or travel, the amount that it takes to work, even on a shorter basis, say a 6 month or 1 year basis with someone who can really help build momentum, it is and has been truly valuable for me. I can understand that with the complexity of the music world, it doesn't seem like things can always have a direct result, but they certainly did for me. Keep in mind that a lot of musicians these days feel like they have to have a manager as a starting point. I actually propose that the starting point needs to be a PR agent. Managers these days, unless you have won an international piano competition, in my case as a pianist performer, the piano competition will create a talking point and maybe a little bit of momentum, not necessarily. A manager these days is not like the old world impresario who could identify a young talent and create a career. That's not going to happen these days. The managers will manage what is already there to be managed. A PR agent will disseminate these talking points. And to really get the word out about their excitement, that's again why they have to resonate with you as a person. They have to understand who you are, musically and humanly. It is your role to build this momentum. And then at that point, you could get a manager if that's what you feel is beneficial. But I do think it's in that order, unless you happen to be one of the top 2% who can actually really sustain multiple competition wins, and then they're introduced to all the right performers who believe in them, and then the conductors who can take them on as soloists. It's very complex. But again, I think for me, this was the best investment. And it's even hard to use that word because it wasn't just money that I was putting into it. It was my energy. It was connecting a vision. Yes, it takes a lot. It takes a lot. But I think without this, I wouldn't be where I am today as host of Living the Classical Life, traveling around the world to festivals, doing fundraising benefits, wearing Giorgio Armani, if that's something that people find interesting or not. But it keeps branching out. That would be my point. I think each performer should at least speak with someone in your position to have their vision reflected back at them.
I really appreciate you saying that. I couldn't agree more. Two more questions, and then we can wrap this up. I'm curious if you want to speak about any future projects.
I think what will be important for me personally moving forward is to find the type of balance in my life that can keep some of this momentum under control, actually, because if you're not careful, actually things can start to move too quickly. So then you have to pick and choose. I'm excited that last summer's filming in two different festivals. So there was the Pernod Festival, and then there was also the Rosendal Chamber Festival in Norway. So we filmed in these two festivals in beautiful settings in Europe. That was noticed by a lot of festivals. And so this upcoming summer, it will be all across July and August, various locations. Festivals want to be documented and showcase their setting and their mission and their guests. So it's win-win. I love to travel. I love to see places. I love to meet people. So I'm very, very excited about how this is unfolding. This German crew with whom we're now working, they're coming to the United States in the month of May, and we're going across several different states, filming different types of stories, including about the rebuilding of my 1893 Steinway. So we'll be filming a little mini documentary about what it takes to do that and what's what. There's that. Going back to my hometown and filming just examples of a really great classical music public radio station, what it takes to do that. We have an incredible performing arts center in the Krannert Center in Champaign-Urbana. I want to talk about what it takes to do that in the world today, especially here in America, where funding works differently. It's not state-sponsored like in Europe. So different types of projects for me as a pianist. I'm looking forward to balancing that in a way that I can develop and build my solo repertoire, my concertos, and have more opportunities to share that. But again, the visibility that I have through living the classical life has given me opportunities also as a solo pianist. And I think that's one of the unexpected things. I just didn't know that would be in the cards.
I ask everyone on the podcast, all the guests, about success. And I'm really curious, as a last question, what that means to you.
Wow, Jonathan, that's I have to take a moment to think about that, because I think there's success on all sorts of levels, but I think we have to feel well with ourselves first to construct a balanced sense of living, finding fulfillment. For me, that means connecting with the community in a meaningful way. I don't think success means that you have to be famous. I don't think that if you're a performer that you have to play in the biggest halls 120 times a year. I think it's identifying what makes you the happiest, and to find a zone where you can make your best art. I think that's success for me, but it always has to include other people. And that includes your friends and then the people who believe in you, like yourself.
Thanks for listening to the Classical Post podcast. I hope you have found it meaningful and that it gave you new ideas to cultivate your creativity to be better in business and life. So let's stay in touch. Remember to follow this podcast to get notified of new episodes and sign up for our monthly newsletter for album recommendations and editorial on leading artists. Just head to classicalpost.com/subscribe.